Blog Talk Radio.
All right. And we have 59 minutes left. This just in. Where's it at? Yes. This just in. It's Thursday. That's all I have.
Dateline.
Yes. It's August the 6th, Thursday. And if it's not August the 6th, please don't call right now, okay? But otherwise, we encourage you to call the program, ask your questions, leave a comment, you know, call us, talk to Ron, talk to myself. It's all about wine at 7 o'clock. Here we go.
Welcome to the call-in talk show that is all about wine with special guest Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery. Located 4 miles west of Interstate 75 on State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Winery details and event information will be announced during the show. So sit back, relax, and join us with a cool glass of world-class wine produced right here in Florida. Your comments, questions, and dialogue are welcome. Registered users of Blog Talk Radio can call for free by using the Click to Talk button on our show page, or send questions and comments in our chat room. Registration on Blog Talk Radio is free and only takes a minute. All other listeners may call us by phone. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Tampa listeners may call our local number by dialing area code 813-990-0741. That's 813-990-0741. Finally, if you have Skype, call the show by contacting ChicoDog1. That's DAWG and the number 1. Call us anytime during this hour-long program. It's all about wine. And now, from Florida Estates Winery, here is Ron.
I see the bus dropped off the people. We got a lot out there tonight.
Yes, we have. Yes, there they are. Thank you for joining us. We have three buses out there now. So
wow, yeah, I was going to say, nice afternoon, nice evening here in Florida. Big crowd.
That's right, and we have rain, but it's off the coast right now, so we're not going to worry about that. Everybody is safe for now. Let's see. This is I'm only seeing 11 shows, and today's word is reservation. So if you've captured all 11 words from the previous shows, you should be almost a wine expert, and you'll be getting your certificates in the mail very shortly. So, hey, that'd be next. Wow, that's...
Well, we need your address, though, so you need to call in and write it.
That's a good point, yes. I don't have an address, so you won't be getting the certificates, but...
You won't be getting until we get your address.
anyway, here we are. We have Ron on the phone online, and we're ready to take your calls. Area code 646-727-3235. Call, that is a local number if you're located in California somewhere. And or you can call 813. You know, we haven't really tried this one yet.
I know.
We're probably getting a busy... you know what? I have to turn the voicemail off. Okay. Or you can call... don't call it right now because I have to turn the voicemail off. It's 990-0741. That is 813 area code. It's easy for people in Tampa area to call a local number. And we have tonight's topic starting at 7 o'clock until 8 o'clock is grape varieties or varietals.
Varietals.
Yes. And Ron, we're ready to go. We'll continue on, and we'll give out the call-in numbers a little bit. Let me turn this off. Okay, go ahead. Sorry about
that. All right. I want to, Mike and I were talking before we got on air here. For people who get our Facebook messages and all that, Florida Estates Winery is on Facebook, and I just put out a little notice on Facebook about the wild boars that are tearing up the yard. And, it's unbelievable how bad those things are. We are on a big ranch. We're a 3,600-acre ranch. The winery is located in the middle of that, in an old bunkhouse, an old hunting lodge and bunkhouse. And because of the location, we have a lot of wild boar that run around the property. And there's a lot of them. I've seen herds of 25, 30 wild boar, and a lot of piglets, but big herds going around. And they have decided to take a liking to the yard around the winery. and it is driving me insane. They are digging in, rooting up all the bugs and everything, but as they're doing this, they are really tearing up the yard, and it is a nightmare. So I just wanted to share that with everybody. We also have a family of four armadillos that live underneath the laundry room that's on the side of the winery, and they come out and they dig around, they root around for bugs. And we also have sandhill cranes that are permanent year-round residents right on the winery property, and they also like to dig in and eat bugs. So we have a competition between the wild boar, the armadillo, and the sandhill cranes trying to get all the bugs out of the yard, which I suppose is a lot better than any pest control company can possibly get, but it's not good for the lawn overall.
Now, do you see a possibility here of expanding your services maybe to, you know, if you bring all those animals together, maybe having like a small petting zoo or something? Or is it
just... Yeah, now that there's a possibility. Yeah. There is a possibility. The armadillos aren't afraid of you. The armadillos really will, they're blind as a bat. I mean, but they will walk right up to you, and once they smell that you're human, they jump up in the air and scurry away. So the armadillo is a possibility. Everybody is always excited and thrilled about seeing the armadillos, which, I have to continue to remind them that they're nothing but rodents.
Right.
The sandhill cranes are really not too afraid of people. They don't come around during the festivals, but they do wander around. In fact, I walked outside one day, and one of them took offense at the fact that I happened to be walking outside while he was eating, and he chased me back inside. So, the fear of getting impaled in the chest by a sandhill crane beak is enough to make anybody run, I think.
I think so.
And then the wild boar, I don't know if I'd want to pet those or not. So I don't know. The answer to your question, I would have to say no. But okay. Maybe the possibility of gathering them all up and renting them out to clear out bugs out of people's yards might not be out of the realm of possibilities.
Okay.
Yeah. No guarantee on what the yard's going to look like, but you won't have any bugs.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Well. We'll try something. Let it get
yeah.
It's a nuisance, but that's okay. Anyway.
So, great varietals. We have been talking over the past few weeks about different wine-growing regions. We've mentioned a few grapes. We talked about Cabernet Sauvignon, I believe. We talked about Chardonnay. I think Riesling was the topic 1 week. And so we've talked a little bit about grapes and went into quite a bit of detail on all that. And we've talked about different growing regions around the world. Italy was one of them, Spain. I think we might start a 2 or 3 week loop on France, and it may take us a couple of weeks on France because of all the extended stuff. Germany and then United States. In the United States, I'm sure it's going to take a couple of weeks because we are quite diversified in the United States as far as grape growing regions go. But these are coming up. But before we go into those, I just said I'd spend tonight talking about grape varietals. As a quick review, and I think I mentioned this before, but as a quick review, a varietal is a name of a wine named after the grape. If you have yourself, like we have a Plantation Red, a Plantation White, a Plantation Blush, these are generic names. A red wine is just a generic term for a red wine. It could be blended with anything. It could be any number of types of wines thrown into that bottle, into that mix, into that final product. And so, therefore, it doesn't give it a specific name. In the United States, it has to contain at least 75% of a certain grape to be called a varietal wine. Grape varietals or grape varieties are tremendous amounts of them available out there. There are over 5,000 different grape varieties in the vinifera family, and the vinifera family is the most common family for wine grapes. This is the one that actually characterized by being bunch grapes. They're usually a little bit smaller grapes, not a lot of juice per grape. A good example of bunch grapes or vinifera family would be your table grapes. If you were to go to the store, buy yourself a bag of grapes, red, white, black, any of those, they are green. Those are vinifera family, Vitis vinifera family. So most wine grapes are made of the Vitis vinifera family. And we're going to talk about a variety of different varietals. I'm going to tell you a little bit about each one and talk about each one just quickly. I'm not going to go into a lot of details on them, but we'll go through pronunciation and different things. First one, we'll start with whites, Chardonnay. And I will spell and pronounce because people seem to get confused on pronunciations of grapes quite often. In the class I teach every month, one of the things I do is hand out a little piece of paper that lists a name of a grape and how to pronounce it, because it is difficult for a lot of people to pronounce or to understand how to pronounce it. I hate to say it, but Merlot is really mispronounced more often than we care to admit. A lot of people put the T on it, and in France, if you have a word ending in a consonant, it's usually not pronounced, usually silent, so it would be a Merlot, although it does end in a T. So, to start with here, Chardonnay, spelled C-H-A-R-D-O-N-N-A-Y, pronounced Chardonnay. Chardonnay is actually a very prolific grape. The Chardonnay is the most popular grape in the United States. It is the biggest selling wine in this country. It outsells any other red or white. It is also one of the most widely planted white wine grapes in the world. It grows very well just about everywhere. And it, because it grows well everywhere, everybody can find places to put it in. 35, 40 years ago, California only had about less than 1,000 acres of Chardonnay planted. It wasn't really a big popular grape then. And since then, that has jumped up to over tens of thousands of acres. It's just exploded. And again, because it is easy to grow and it is relatively an inexpensive grape to grow. It takes care of itself during the grow. And you can come up with some good quality Chardonnay. Chardonnays can be made in a very light, soft, fruity style, or they can be made in a very heavy, strong, oaked, for many years, and then second fermentation, malolactic fermentation, give you a butteriness, and you can get yourself an extremely powerful Chardonnay. The ones that you find most often in most areas around this country are lighter, slightly oak style. I put together a Chardonnay. I use 80% California Chardonnay and blend it with 20% Florida grape. It's an un-oaked Chardonnay. It's more of a fruit-forward Chardonnay. It really, un-oaked Chardonnay should be becoming more and more popular. There's some of the trade journals that we have that are being distributed or that we get monthly are talking about how popular the un-oaked Chardonnays are starting to become, simply because it's a style that was used and is still used in France quite often. And without the heavy oakiness and all that, you're getting more the characteristics of the crispiness of the grape. You're not getting the oak, heavy oak and flavors of the oak so much as you're bringing out the flavors of the grape. The Chardonnay, when heavily oaked, you're going to get a creamy butteriness with vanilla, spicy flavors and taste. Un-oaked, you're going to bring out more flavors of apple, pear, peach, lemon, grapefruit type aromas. It's the oak really does create a different style of Chardonnay, a different type of it. The Chardonnay, because of its ability to grow just about everywhere, is become a one of the biggest, most popular wines around the world. The Burgundy region of France, the famous Puy-Fousse is a Chardonnay. California, Sonoma, Russian River has some fantastic Chardonnays. Napa, of course, Canaries and Central Coast. Central Coast, Monterey, does an excellent job on Chardonnays there because of the cool climate coming in off the waters. Washington State, Australia, Chile, Argentina. You can go on and on. Chardonnays are one of those grapes that you can find an area and find it growing just about anywhere. Question that's asked, and I want to cover this quickly. In fact, I just read an article. The difference between a $6 bottle of Chardonnay and a $36 bottle of Chardonnay. Is the $36 bottle of Chardonnay really six times better than the $6 bottle of Chardonnay? In a word, I would have to say no. It is better, and you can tell the difference, and you can taste the difference, but is it six times better? Is it worth the $36 as opposed to the $6? As you start moving up in the price of wines, be it Chardonnays or anything else, any other wine, the cost helps reflect a lot of what goes into that wine. For example, right now, California Chardonnays in Napa Valley are selling for about $4,000 a ton, and that's how we sell grapevines, our grapes, juice, and berries is by the ton. And California Chardonnay is going for like $4,000 a ton. So if you're going to get a Napa Chardonnay that's going to be aged in oak and an oak barrel, a French oak barrel is going to run you, say, $1,500 for 59 gallons, and you're going to age that for 3 years in oak, and then you're going to before they put it through a second fermentation, then you're going to have to bottle it. And after all this work and everything goes into it, the cost is not going to be $6. Obviously, the cost is going to jump up. Just your cost per ton is going to dictate that it's going to be more. And then you have all the other factors that are going to be thrown in there, too. And I hate to say it, being a winemaker myself, but one of the factors is the winemaker's opinion of themselves and of the wine that they're making. Many winemakers feel, I did an excellent job on this. This is the best thing I've ever made. So therefore, it is worth lots of money. If it is or isn't, is a debatable point. But again, these are one of those factors that when you start talking about different wines and the cost factors, how much difference does the winemaker's ability or the high-priced winemakers that a lot of wineries are now paying their winemakers? There are winemakers that fly in from France and work with a winery for a month and then fly away, and they get big bucks to do that because they lend their name and their expertise to it. So a $6 Chardonnay may be good, maybe something that you enjoy. A $36 Chardonnay is not six times better, but it is enough better so that you can tell the difference. That goes with any wine. The cost that you jump up on it will start to reflect. Now, if you're looking at, let's say, for example, a Cabernet Sauvignon. If you're looking at a Cabernet Sauvignon that costs $10 as opposed to one that costs $1,000, is it, 100 times better? No, definitely not. And for the stretches of my mind, I can't see how it could be. But the subtleties of it, the little things that people seem to enjoy and all that, might make it better. I personally can't see it, but enough for that. I want to cover that a little bit because a lot of Chardonnays on the market now around $10 price range, and you can go down and you can look at a lot of Chardonnays that jump up 3-4 times that amount, and you're saying, why should I buy those when I can buy four of these with the same price? The difference is there in that area. You can tell the difference. So enough of that. Next one, Sauvignon Blanc. The grape spelled Sauvignon Blanc, pronounced Sauvignon Blanc. This is a dry white wine grape, and it usually has very distinct flavors of citrus, melon, herb, some figs, and grassiness. Now, grassiness is very important in Sauvignon Blanc. A lot of Sauvignon Blancs that you pick up the grassiness to different areas. New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs tend to present the grassiness quite well. This Sauvignon Blanc thrives quite well in the white as a white wine of the Bordeaux region. Again, it produces the Puy-Fumé, of the Sancerre, and Sancerre, the Loire Valley of France. It's also very popular in California, New Zealand, Chile. It is used a lot as an aperitif wine, more so than with food, because of its little lightness that it presents. It is an extremely popular wine around the world. It is grown in just about every country. And I mentioned it before, and I will say it again, New Zealand probably has established themselves as one of the better Sauvignon Blanc growing areas in the world in the last few years because of the fact that it's the climate down there and the being off the east, the southeast corner of Australia, it gets a lot of influence from the waters and stuff, and so it does give you a lot of a lot better grape from the New Zealand area. A lot of California Sauvignon Blancs are labeled Fumé Blanc. Mondavi is one of the most famous ones that I can think of. They call the Sauvignon Blanc Fumé Blanc. It's F-U-M-E, Fumé Blanc, which is, again, the same thing. The Sauvignon Blanc is usually not oaked. It is a lighter. The oak seems to take away from the grape itself and leave you with oakiness more so than anything else. The Marlborough and Hawke's Bay regions of New Zealand, again, if you're looking for Sauvignon Blanc, pick up ones from those. We had a Sauvignon Blanc from Chile that we carried for a while, sold out really quite quickly. The Sauvignon Blanc is really one of those grapes that people seem to enjoy, and they try it and they pick it up if they're unsure about what to do. The Sauvignon Blanc seems to be light enough and using a fruity, crispy manner that people tend to enjoy quite often. Pinot Grigio or Pinot Gris. Now, this P-I-N-O-T, that's pronounced Pinot. There's a lot of Pinot grape varieties. Pinot Grigio, G-R-I-G-I-O. Pronounced Pinot Grigio or Pinot, P-I-N-O-T, Gris, G-R-I-S. These are the same grapes. They are goes by different names, and you find this quite often in different grapes. They'll be called different things in different areas. Again, the Fumé Blanc and the Sauvignon Blanc is a good example. The Pinot Grigio is a very popular Italian grape. It's grown throughout a lot of the areas of Italy. Usually made in the dry style with a fruity pear, apple, a little bit of hint of lemon, mineral type aromas to it. Medium body, drink them young. They're not ones to be aged for any length of time. The Pinot Gris, again, is different areas will call their belabored Pinot Gris. I know some California wineries, I can't think of any particular one right now, but a Pinot Gris is used quite often as the designation from California, some of the California wineries, but it is the same grape as a Pinot Grigio. Pinot Grigio seem to be very popular now. You find lots of people who say, oh, I just love Pinot Grigio. Pinot Grigio is the in grape right now for some reason. And that'll last for a while, and then it'll switch over to something else, which is great and gives people. But you'd be surprised how many people will come into the winery and ask if we do have a Pinot Grigio just because this is, oh, I'm really into the Pinot Grigios now. And I give them the Plantation White and say this is comparable to it, and it is. The Plantation White is a light, fruity, soft white wine that it does compare to the Pinot Grigio, Pinot Gris. Gewürztraminer. This is probably the toughest wine to pronounce and long spelling on it. Spelled G-E-W-U with the little two dots above it, the German two dots. R-Z-T-R-A-M-I-N-E-R. Gewürztraminer. A Gewürztraminer is usually a spicy a grape, not hot spicy or anything, but more like spicy fruit flavors. citrus, peach, little bites of those. It makes some great wines of Alsace region. Usually very crisp, fruity, dry styles, a lot of honey to it. They are great grape to use for late harvest wines. The Gewürztraminer is growing in Germany a lot and used a lot of areas, not just Germany, for late harvest. California, Washington State also produce some nice Gewürztraminers, ranging from semi-sweet to sweet style. I really personally enjoy a good Gewürztraminer. It's just, it gives a crispness, a spiciness that is just absolutely enjoyable. You can pair it with heavier foods. The sweet Gewürztraminer goes great with desserts and cheesecakes and stuff, the dry style. Which, when I say dry, it's not completely dry. You're still getting that spice, a little spiciness that goes well with turkey, pork, and veal, a lot of cheeses and stuff. It's a nice wine to add a little variety. If you're not familiar with Gewürztraminer, it is a wonderful wine. It is planted throughout the world, but most notably in the Alsace region. And again, it one of those grapes that produces a outstanding late harvest wine, a late harvest dessert wine in a lot of areas of the world. Washington State usually puts out a lot of late harvest Gewürztraminers, or a very sweet Gewürztraminer. Riesling, R-I-E-S-L-I-N-G, pronounced Riesling. Riesling grape is one of the noble grapes. I've mentioned the noble grape varieties a few programs back. Riesling is one of the noble grapes. The Riesling probably has the ability to give you one of the widest ranges of grapes of any, or of wines of any grape you're going to find. The Riesling grape itself is a white grape that I've had a chance to taste some Riesling grapes, and they're really pretty good compared to a lot of other grapes. They do have a little bit of sweetness to it that when you bite into them. It is probably known, the Riesling grape known most for the German sweet wines. The whole variety of from the driest to the sweetest German wines, from the Cabernet, Spätlese, Oystlese, Baron Oystlese, Trocken Baron Oystlese, to the, even to Ice Wine. A lot of those are Riesling grapes coming out of Germany. A very strong grape, easy to grow in the right conditions. If you are looking to get away from the white Zinfandels, a Riesling is the next logical step. You can find styles, like I just mentioned, of a Riesling ranging anywhere from a very dry West Virginia, Virginia. Those two states put out a fantastic dry Riesling. New York State, there's a few wonderful dry Rieslings coming out there. My complaint about New York is the fact that they have the ability to make some world-class Rieslings, and it's just really sad, in my opinion, that they don't spend more time to start doing it and be noted for that, because they also have the climate and the region, the areas and everything that they need there to come out with some Rieslings that could blow everyone else away. Also, the Riesling can be made into, like I just mentioned, some of the sweetest wines in the world, the Ice Wines, the Trockenbaron Oystlaces, and all this out of Germany. Usually they produce a crisp wine, semi-dry. Again, a lot of people come into the winery and say, I love a Riesling. And I said, okay. I said, but that's like saying I love a hamburger. You have such a range of hamburgers, different ways you can fix them, make them, purchase them, that, you know, it doesn't narrow it down any. So, but a lot of times when people think of Riesling, they do think of the little semi-sweet Riesling, the one with the little bit of sweetness to it and almost a little sweet grapiness. Chenin Blanc, C-H-E-N-I-N-B-L-A-N-K, B-L-A-N-C, Chenin Blanc. Chenin Blanc is a grape that's really quite popular. It's used for blending in a lot of white wines. It can be made in a light, crisp style, dry styles. Washington State, California's tend to put these out to some very sweet, honey-like wines out of the Loire Valley of France. Most Chenin Blancs tend to be a little off-dry to sweet. They're not at the far ends of these scales. They have a lot of crispness to the grape, a lot of floral aroma. Makes for very pleasant wines to have with light seafoods, hors d'oeuvres, fruit, if it's a sweet wine, fruit, desserts and stuff. White Zinfandel. We can't talk about white wines without mentioning white Zinfandel. And the reason, the white Zinfandel is really a red grape. The Zinfandel is a red grape. But the white Zinfandel, and that's white, Zinfandel, white Zinfandel. The white Zinfandel has become so popular because of the slight fruitiness to it. It's a lot of people start with a white Zinfandel, which is similar to a blush or a rosé-style wine, and because of the fruitiness and all that. And then they tend to move on to other white wines and even drier styles, Chenin Blancs, Pinot Grigios, and go into a lighter reds after that. So a white Zin is usually a good introduction wine for a lot of people. Within the last 15, 20 years, the white Zinfandel really became most popular. Actually, the wine journals in the publications, in the business of the publication, they used to have white wine and red wine, and they used to list all the sales, monthly sales around the world and stuff like that by cases, not by dollars of these. They had to include a blush or a rosé category, which would include the white Zin, white Merlots and stuff. Because these started to become so popular, the blush category covers about 10-12% of the total sales, but in the worldwide scheme of things, that's quite a bit. So the white Zin is very popular. Next one, Viognier, V-I-O-G-N-I-E-R, pronounced Viognier, V-E-E-O-W-N-Y-A-Y, Viognier. Recently, the Viognier has become more and more popular. It had fallen out of favor a lot, used a lot just as a blending wine. And people had gotten away from it, and it was not being planted, especially in France. The Viognier grape came down to worldwide. It had less than 100 acres planted in the grape. People were just basically ignoring it. But a few years back, the what they call the Rhone Rangers of California, these the Rhone Valley of France, people in California who likes to emulate that area, decided to start popping in the Viognier grape in California, and it flourished. It became a very good growing grape. It started to be blended with other wines. It came out with its own varietal. And France saw this, and they started to plant the Viognier grape. And a lot of the Viognier is planted in southern France now. There's thousands of acres of Viognier being planted in France. So one of those cases where close to extinction, and they turned it around and brought it back. Now it's being used quite often. The Viognier is a close cousin to the Gewürztraminer. Gives you a lot of the spiciness, aromatic nose, and a little lighterness to it. Rarely is it a rich, full-bodied white. It's usually just a light, fruity white. Next one is Albarino. That's A-L-B-A-R-I-N-O, or I. In H-O, Albarino. This is grown primarily in the Spain's Galicia region. It is a low-yielding grape, good quality in the grape, but a low yielding grape. And when you start getting low yielding grapes, you obviously cannot produce as much out of it. This grape is very thick skin, and so the juice is very limited. The wines, if you get a chance to pick up one, you'll find them out of Portugal and Spain in that area. If you find and pick up one, though, they're usually produce sort of a creamy white wine with apricot, peach, citrus type aromas and flavors to it. Interesting. I've had Averina before, and it is really a nice, complex wine. Arneis, A-R-N-E-I-S, pronounced Arneis. This is a white wine grape that originated in Italy, in the Piedmont, southern Piedmont region, and is still primarily grown there as opposed to anywhere else in the world. Again, this was once nearly extinct, and it's made a comeback in recent years. A perfumey wine with apple, pear type notes to it, a little citrus notes to it. You'll see it sold as the Roraro Arneis, simply because of the region that it's from. The next one, Arsitico, A-S-S-Y-R-T-I-K-O. Arsitico is a Greek grape, and it's usually classified as one of the better white wines coming out of Greece. It is a fruity wine, high acid, citrusy type fruitiness aromas to it, but usually it's dry to the taste, earthy mineral flavors to it, but the fruitiness comes out quite well in the aromas. The next is the Chasselet. That's spelled C-H-A-S-S-E-L-A-S. It's pronounced Chasselet. And this is grown in Switzerland, small sections of France, Germany, Italy, New Zealand. Not real popular. One of the oldest cultivated varieties, though it's thought to have originated in the Middle East. It is still one of Switzerland's leading grape varieties. It not being planted as much around the world. It is one of those that is not being planted, usually as a blend. You can't find it as a wine by itself. Cortese, C-O-R-T-E-S-E. This is a white wine grown in mainly in northwest Italy, in the Piedmont region and parts of Lombardy. It is a good quality wine, high acid, some fruitiness, aroma, and flavors. It is a DOC, comes from the DOC region of Gavi, and it's used a lot over there as a varietal. We don't see it too much here. You can look in different stores and probably find it. Next one, Falangina, F-A-L-A-N-G-H-I-N-A, Falangina. This is from the Campia region of Italy also. They think that the wines made from the ancestor of this grape were grown by the Romans, and it's became a very popular varietal and also used a lot as a blending wine for a lot of the wines in the northern Italy. Fetasca Alba, F-E-T-E-A-S-C-A, Fetasca Alba, A-L-B-A. This is grown in Eastern Europe, primarily around Romania and stuff like that. Almost a muscat-like wine, low acid, peachy aromatic aromas to it. Fejeno, F-I-A-N-O, Faeno, is noted for its honey, almonds, and dried fruit aromas. Again, growing in the inland regions near the town of Alvino, Faeno traces its roots back to Greek times in the Greek occupations of Italy in that area. Formint, F-U-R-M-I-N-T. This is one of the grapes used in the Hungarian Tokay wines. Forment is a thin-skinned wine which makes it very susceptible to Botrytis cinerea, and this is the noble rot. I described this in previous programs. This causes the grapes to shrivel up and concentrate sugar and flavors and fruit, and the ferment is one of them that is used really quite often to make the rich, sweet Tokay wines that are actually some of the sweetest in the world, surpassing even the Sauternes of France on many occasions and as far as sweetness goes. They're also made into a very strong, high alcohol, high acid wine that is available throughout Hungary and Eastern Europe. Oh, there's the phone.
Wow.
Somebody's calling me and telling me I'm saying something wrong. so I need to call on the program.
Yes.
The Tokay d'Alsace, which is a Pinot Gris, and the Italian variety Tokay, T-O-C-A-I, are not related to the format. These are, it's been thought that they are related. You know, I'm realizing it's taking me longer to go through these. We might have to do the reds next week.
Yeah, there you go. That'll work.
Yeah, hey, that's fine. Fine with me. And we might have to finish the whites next week even, too. I've got a lot more to go through here and tell people about.
Okay.
The next one, Garganga. Garganga. G-A-R-G-A-N-E-G-A. Garganga. Garganga, yeah. It is a very prolific white wine, growing primarily in Italy's Suave region and put in the Italian Suave wines. We're all familiar with the Suave. They're on all the shelves, and I think everybody has had an Italian Suave at one time or another. The grape has been established for centuries in Italy. The Veneto region has used it there for hundreds of years. It's also grown in Lombardy, in southern Umbria. It makes for a very nice, delectable wine that has pronounced almond characters to it. I've had this before, and I can just go on. It reminds me. What a Gewurztraminer and a Chardonnay would be if you blended the two together. You get characteristics from both of them. The almond characteristic really comes out quite well. The Gracatoa, G-R-E-C-H-E-T-T-O, Gracatoa. This is a white wine grape grown primarily in Italy's Umbria region, where along with the Trebbiano and Malvasia are the wines known in the blends there in the Umbria region. It is usually a rich, nutty characteristics. Blended a lot, this from what I've discovered on this. I can't say that I have an opportunity to taste this, but the nutty character is used a lot to bring out the blending characteristics. The Greco, G-R-E-C-O, Greco. This is a white wine grown in Italy's Campi and Calabria regions. Origins for this grape go back to Greek influence when the Greeks came over and introduced it into Italy. It is capable of producing very high quality wines with a lot of fruity flavors, rich fruity flavors, with just hints of smokiness and toastiness. It's the Greco di Tufo is a dry wine that is probably the best known variety. If you're going to get a Greco, it's going to be this dry with this toast smokiness to it. Next one, Gruner Feltliner, G-R-U with the little dots over it, German, N-E-R, Gruner Feltliner, B-E-L-T-L-I-N-E-R, Feltliner. This white wine grape is grown primarily in Austria, and it actually is the country's most widely planted grape in Austria. It's also cultivated in Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Slovenia, the Czech Republic now, and the Slovenian Republic. It produces a crisp, light-bodied wine, a little spiciness to it. It is, you can find it probably more often than anything coming out of Austria, in Austrian wines. Huxleyreba. Spelled H-U-X-E-L-R-E-B-E, Huxleyreba. This is a German white wine grape derived from a cross of the Chasselas and the Quartier Musk. The Huxleyreba is grown primarily in Germany in the Rheinhausen and Rheinpfalz regions and is named after the viticulturist of the name Fritz Huxel, who actually did extensive hybrid and research on the late 1920s. And the problem with this grape, it needs to be extensively and carefully pruned to produce some good grapes. A nice acid balance with some high sugars on it. If pruned properly, it gives some great wine. Alsace wines for the German and Austrian areas there. Even in poor vintages, it can give you some nice sweet wines. Again, this does have to be pruned and carefully pruned. And in poor vintages, it's almost labor-intensive to try to get them down to the pruning that you need. The Koenner, K-E-R-N-E-R. Is pronounced Koenner. This was a grape developed in the late 1960s. It's a white hybrid. It is a combination of a red grape, a Trollinger, and the white Riesling grape. And it's usually planted most heavily in Germany. They do a lot of hybrid work over there too, by the way. Most heavily planted in Germany in the Rheinhausen and Rheinpfalz regions. It's cultivated throughout the country, but these are the areas that you're going to find it most often. It produces a Riesling-like wine with good acid, good floral thing, but it's also produces wine that can be aged, which for white wines is a rarity, and this one has the aging potential. The next one, Malvasia, or Malvasia, pronounced both ways, spelled M-A-L-V-A-S-I-A, Malvasia. This grape has been in existence for over 2,000 years. It's believed to come from the Aegean Sea area, Turkey, the islands between Turkey and Greece, that region. It has many sub-varieties, though, and you will find this. I found this a lot in red grapes as I was searching this some of this stuff out. You find this in a lot of red grapes, that they have a lot of sub-varieties that are used quite often in from one parent. The red grape on this is it does have a red grape sub-variety called the Malvasia Nera. And this is grown primarily around Italy in the Piedmont region. The red grape is used for blend a lot. The Malvasia is not a high-yielding grape. A lot of areas are popping them out to put in a better producing, better yielding grapes because it's just, again, you start getting into labor-intensive work on these things when you don't have a grape that produces a lot, but you're still going to have to put as much time and effort. As a vineyard grows, most growers try to get their grapes to produce right around 5 tons per acre. Some of them that produce more than that, they prune and trim back to keep it right around 5 tons. But when you start getting less than that, and some of these grapes will only produce 2, 2.5, maybe 3 tons per acre, and you're still putting as much work into it as your orange ones that are producing 5 tons or more. So it becomes cost prohibitive. Malvasia is usually as a dry wine, sometimes sweet, even used as a fortified and sparkling wines. It's quite useful in just about any area. But again, in Italy, they are putting in the Trebbiano grapes in its place because it doesn't produce well in Spain. They're substituting it with a Macabeo. Just different ones that they try to, again, get the variety or the plantings up. Malvasia is also can be made into a real sweet, rich style of the Madeira wine that is a grape used quite often in white port. So it's very common for that. Let me go through a couple more here, and then I think we'll just break it off tonight, and we'll finish it up next week here. Marsan, spelled M-A-R-S-A-N-N-E, Marsan. This is a white wine grape that dominates Northern Rhone. It's used for blending a lot, produces a dry white wine with a high alcohol. Hence, you blend it to get that down. You blend it with other grapes. It produces a lot of fruit, apricot flavors, and tree fruits, apples, pears. It adds depth to a lot of the Rhone wines. It's blended a lot with Rosane. It's bigger grape. It's a white wine grape, but the grape color itself is a little bit darker. It almost starting to look like it's a purple grape, but the skin is very translucent, so it isn't. The Moschofello, I believe is pronounced, spelled Moschofilero. Moschofilero is a very aromatic grape, grown in cool climates, pink skin that thrives well in mountainous regions, Peloponnese and Mantinia. It's usually a lighter wine, 11% alcohol is usually what it levels out on the alcohol level. Again, aromas of apricots and peaches. If you notice, a lot of these white wines do come out with a very fruity aromas. The Moscofilero is a similar to the Voynet, but with not as much depth. Moscofilero makes a very nice dry rosé. It's from Greece. And the island, the areas I was reading are Greek regions. It's a very good introduction to Greek wines. If you're looking for a Greek wine to become familiar with Greek wines, this is a good way to get started on it. It gives you a little bit lighter, fruitier style and tells you a little bit more about it. And then one more I'll cover tonight, and we'll continue the grape varietals next week, the Müller-Thurgau. Müller-Thurgau, spelled M-U-L-E-R-T-H-U-R-G-A-U, Müller-Thurgau, or Thurgau. I think the T-H is not pronounced as Thurgau. This is a Riesling-Sylvaner hybrid. It was named for the person who did the hybrid on it, Dr. Hermann Müller-Thurgau, or Thurgau. He created it in the late 1800s. It's really the most widely cultivated wine in Germany. It produces a low acid, medium sweet wine, a hint of muscat flavor. Probably some of the better wines coming out of Germany, especially the Moselle region. It's found quite extensively there. Again, they cut back on the growth and the restrictions of it. And because of that, concentrates of flavors and depth quite extensively in the Moselle region. It is one of the major grapes used in the Liefermilch. We are all familiar with that. That's Blue Nun is a good example of the Liefermilch. And the cats, the blue bottle, the cats and things are the one that's shaped like a cat's and the blue bottles and all that. So the Müller-Thurgau is the most common grape used in those regions. So that's starting us on some white grape varietals. We'll finish on the whites and go into the reds next week. Yeah. And I'll turn it back over to you, Mike, here.
Okay. Excellent. Wow.
Thank you.
That was quite a bit of information just to cover on the whites.
We're not even through them, man. It's amazing. Like I said, there's over 5,000 out there, so.
Okay. So we have a ways to go. let's see. We have a couple of events coming up at the winery, August the 22nd. Mark your calendars, August 22nd. From 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. is a wine class. Everything you want to know about wine. I had the information here. Brief history of the wines, the varietals again, diseases of the grapes, wine glass styles, uses, cork history, oak aging, and of course, wine tasting. And so it's a great class. You can sample the wines. They discuss everything in detail there at the winery, Florida State's Winery. August 22nd is the next wine class, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. That's a Saturday. And the next Wine Fest is August 29th. Mark your calendars, August 29th, Wine Fest, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And definitely want to go check out Wine Fest on Saturday. That is the next one. And Ron, as always, it's been great. I'm going to do the little outro thing so we can find out how to contact the winery and more information on the show. Every Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. It's All About Wine with Ron of Florida Estates Winery. Thank you, Ron. We'll talk to you, next week, next Thursday.
Thank you, audience.
Thank you. We'll be right back. Well, end the show.
This concludes our call-in talk show for the evening. Special thank you to Ron Hunt of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Visit the winery online at www.floridaestateswines.com. That's WINES.com. Email address for the winery is corp@floon.com. That's corp@FLEWN.com. Or call area code 813-996-2113. If you're in the area, Florida Estates Winery is located 4 miles west of Interstate 75 on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. For information on our show and music stream, visit us on our MySpace page at www.myspace.com/ChicoDog1. That's DAWG and the number 1. Email address is podcast@ChicoDog.com. Follow the show on Twitter at twitter.com/MikeWCFL. WCFL as in Wesley Chapel, Florida. If you have a topic you would like to discuss on air, please contact me. Chico Dog Live is a weekly talk show hosted on Blog Talk Radio. We encourage our listeners to participate in our online chat room or call us on air at 646-727-3235 and tell your friends and family about us. This episode will be available as a free download on iTunes and our Blog Talk Radio show page. Wow. Thank you for listening to the program. We'll see you next week on Chico Dog Live.
That's interesting.
We ended. just perfectly.
20 seconds. I think there's more to it. I think there's more to it. I don't remember this part.
No.
And we're still on.
And we're still on the air. Maybe we should edit it before.
Let's see. Ron's going to sing right now. Go ahead, Ron.
Wait a minute. Let me think of something. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you. Oh, my gosh. Is it okay? Good. It's off. I think it's. I'll make sure it's off. Let me hang up on.